Welcome to JGL Law for You. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will be discussing a wide array of topics to help you navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today we have Joseph Greenwald and Lake's own Deborah Fazier Smith. Deborah, named one of the top 100 women in Maryland and a leader in the law in Maryland by the Maryland's Daily Record. Welcome aboard, Deborah. I'm so glad to have you back. We've had a little bit of a hiatus.
Thank you, David. It's great to be back.
So with a lot of the country baking, me included, and I think where you are as well, Deborah, let's talk a little bit about how weather, heat in particular, how, if at all, does that affect workers' compensation laws, as strange as it might sound to average folks.
I know. And I think we're all so happy to see, hopefully, a beautiful fall with colored leaves and cooler temps. But it's been unprecedented heat this summer in our country, and Maryland's included. And I think it's really important that you're doing this podcast because, once again, as I've touted before, workers' comp is in the center of things, and it's very significant in both socioeconomic terms, but now even environmental. I think that you've seen throughout the summer unions like UPS striking to try to reach better terms for their workers so that they don't fall ill or die in extreme temperatures. You've seen other workers such as police, public safety, construction, landscape, you name it, everything that's outside have to deal with these very, very different temperatures. So what can we do in Maryland for these workers? We can't, as lawyers.
Deborah, let me ask you a question. You know me, I'm always interrupting, so you're used to it. Let me ask you a question. Right? When we think of workers' compensation injuries that are compensable under the workers' comp laws, most of us think about, you know, slip and fall, some sort of an accident at work, you know, or something happens, you know, that's clear, you know. So how is it that someone, and I know where we're heading, how is it that someone can make a claim for a work-related injury because of the weather?
Right. Well, it's in line with what I have always thought. Like I said, workers' comp is there. People just don't know about it. For example, in Maryland, there's a statute that defines what's an accidental injury that's compensable. And in that statute, 9101B3, which means nothing to most, it defines accidental injury to include, quote, frostbite or sunstroke caused by the weather conditions, end of quote. Now, that doesn't give you a right per se to say, oh, it's hot, I want to file a claim. It doesn't work that way. There's always an issue of causation. But I will tell you that there's two other cases in Maryland. So if you combine the statute plus the other cases, there are avenues where if you get injured or die, God forbid, from heat-related injuries, there is a mechanism to apply. I'm not saying it's completely covered. You have to still bring your case forward. There are defenses. But let me just give you an example. Most people, and these are statistics that I have found, because Maryland Department of Health actually keeps the records. There's a 2022 heat-related illness surveillance summary report, and it talks about the fact that due to heat, and they track from May to September of 2022 for temperatures above 80 degrees Fahrenheit and humidity 43% or greater, where the heat complaints arose. And most of them were Baltimore County, followed by Baltimore City, then Montgomery County, and then Prince George's. So why is this such an issue? Like you said, what's the parameters of filing a claim because of the heat? Well, the most significant issue is that the stats don't really reflect the accurate number of heat-related injuries or death You know why? Because on a death certificate, it's not listed as heat related. Someone goes to the hospital and has a heart attack from a heat incident. They don't put down cause of death heat. They put down heart attack, right? So you're missing a lot of these. But with that statute and with the two cases that I'm going to talk about, there is the possibility whenever there's anything that involves a serious injury under such high temperatures that people should be aware. The first one is a case that really changed and defined what accidental injury is in Maryland. It's called the Harris versus Board of Education case. And although causation's always an issue, it kind of changed.
When you say when you say causation, tell folks what you're talking about, just so we're all on the same page.
Sure.
See, causation's, what is it and why is it always an issue?
Right. It's a defense that the employers have because they want to be able to controvert your claim and say, you know what, it wasn't really the heat that caused this. You know, this was going to happen.
Okay.
And we have a doctor that's reviewed the records and examined you, and this is what we think. And so the claimant also has a right to have their doctor review and examine them. Now, under the Harris case,
So here I go again. So when you say defendants or the defense is trying to poke a hole in that causation, you mean that as a claimant, if someone that you're representing, they have to show that A caused B, right? Is that what you're saying?
You know, yeah.
That the heat caused whatever the injury, in this case, so the heat caused whatever injury they're saying they sustained as a result of it, right? And then the defense is trying to say, no, it wasn't the heat, it was X, whatever X might be. Okay. All right. Got it.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And so like under the Harris case, before you have to show that the activity was unusual, unexpected, you know, the activity itself at work. But now it has to be the standard is the unexpected or the unintended or the unusual must be the resulting injury, not that it was unusual on the job activity. So that gives you a little more leeway. The other thing that gives you some leeway when claimants are thinking about whether or not, you know, they should even proceed with a claim. Well, first of all, when they do proceed with a claim, they have to know that under Maryland workers' comp law, they do not pay an attorney out of pocket, David. They will, their attorney will only be paid out of any resolution if the commissioner awards a fee. And it's out of.
So if someone, all right. So let's just follow up on that real quick. So if someone, again, let's stay in this environment where we're talking about, sorry for the pun, talking about a heat, potentially a heat related injury. If someone wants to explore that, there's nothing that should stop them from calling you because they're worried how much it's going to cost.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
But there's also another case that if we're talking about causations that could possibly help too, where claims can be compensable. If someone had like a pre-existing condition or predisposed, you know, some people have heart issues, some people don't.
Mm-hmm,
you send a person with a heart issue out to do landscaping at 110 degrees, you might have a problem. And this case says that if it's a hazardous condition that aggravate or contribute to the risk, then it also may be compensable. So there's different ways.
So it's sort of like the old, early first year law student, you take your plaintiff as you find them, right? So just because I may have a heart condition and I work for the landscaping firm of X, Y, and Z, that doesn't mean that my injury is any potentially any less compensable than someone who doesn't have a heart condition.
Right. And also if that job puts them in a danger zone that makes it worse. Like, for example, I think the case I was thinking of was a gentleman that had a seizure disorder that rode the back of a truck. And so he had a seizure when he was riding the back of the truck. And the fact that he was riding high on the back of a truck caused him to be in a more dangerous situation than if he was walking around. But in any event, I think that it's interesting because we are going to be facing much higher, as they say, whoever they is, but they say that these heat-related claims are going to climb. It's just like the numbers of the thermometer now. I mean, there's no question that even if people take precautions, and I know that employers and insurers will start really working on this for next summer, like taking cool out time breaks much more often, or keeping their workers hydrated throughout the day, hydration breaks when they're exposed to this type of heat. I'll give you an example. I was stunned that you didn't realize that asphalt in 110 degree temperature can blister you on touch. There's all kinds of injuries, not just, you know, a stroke. So we have to be very, very cognizant going forward that the employee is going to need our help on this, quite different from other years. And, you know, JGL is always there in the forefront to take on anything new that's coming our way. And I think that we're very prepared to see that this happens.
So Deborah, let me ask you a question. So if I'm a claimant and I come to you and we talk about something that happened to me, I work outside for a construction company, whoever it might be, and I sustained some sort of an injury. Maybe I passed out and fell down and hurt my head, or something happened to me as a result of that. I say as a result of the heat and what was going on, and I wasn't provided, you know, there was no water on the job and so on and so forth. How do you, as my lawyer, prove, we get back to that causation again, prove to whatever level is required in these types of cases that the heat is what caused me to pass out, fall, and injure my head in this hypothetical situation?
Yeah, that is basically the doctors. I mean, we ask the questions. Okay. We ask the questions that need to be asked. You know, the statute says heat stroke. So we say, did he have a heat stroke? Did she have a heat stroke? We don't get involved, you know, with the OSHA standards and what they should do and what they shouldn't do. But okay, we come in like after the fact. So we have to go back in time to see what the medical records said, and then ask the experts if, you know, they can opine what the cause is. One of the most interesting quotes, I don't know if it's okay to quote someone.
Of course. But
there's an epidemiologist from the University of Washington named Christy Eby, and she was quoted in an article for The Guardian. And she said that, and I thought this was so striking. She says, there's a reason heat is labeled a silent killer. People often don't realize they are in trouble until things are progressing rapidly. End of quote. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is going to be the issue where landscapers don't want to cancel projects. They send their people out regardless. And I think that employers and insurers really need to get prepared for next summer or the summers ahead if they want to prevent these things, because I think they're preventable. But if they're not, then we're here to file the claim.
Very interesting. So talk to me a little bit about, and I guess some of this goes without saying, but I got to imagine that there are certain occupations that are particularly at risk for conditional environmental weather-related injuries, right? Most of us will think of, you know, the landscaper, the construction person, but there, I'm assuming there's others as well, right?
There are so many others right now. The UPS example was because the back of their truck, they described it as hell. They used the word H-E-L-L, because it was so, so unbearable to go into every, you know, minute to go get packages or what have you.
It's hot.
I'm sure our public safety personnel are facing the same thing because they have to be out there regardless. Even the, you know, you and I have had conversations about the gig economy, which is one of my favorite topics. Even the gig drivers, you know, they're out there. There are many.
You know, it's funny. I would tell you a story. When I went, one of my first jobs that I had, I think I was 15 at the time, 14 or 15. I was a stock boy at old Hans Shoes. Remember Hans Shoes?
Yeah, I loved Hans Shoes.
Back in the day, right? Okay, so every Thursday, and I worked in a mall, local mall. Every Thursday there'd be a delivery, and they would send me down in a freight elevator in the middle of July or August. And that I didn't take a temperature, but it had to be 120 degrees,
wow,
if not higher.
Wow.
And we I'd go down in a freight elevator, and the truck, the Hans truck or whatever they use to deliver it, they would back up, and the truck driver would literally fling boxes at me. However many cartons of shoe boxes. And there often were, 60, 70, 80 cartons. And I mean, cartons that might've had a dozen, 15 pairs of shoes inside. I had to catch them, stack them, and then take them upstairs, unpack all of the boxes from the freight elevator,
sure,
take them on a truck down to the store,
wow,
right? And then stock the shoes.
Wow.
And I remember more times than I can count, I thought I was going to fall over and pass out inside that freight elevator. And everybody in those days, everybody laughed at you, right? You're not working hard enough, or you're not tough enough kind of thing. But this is what I'm thinking of when you're telling me
that's
about
so,
this. I mean,
so,
that's hard work.
So true. And you were lucky that you didn't have that, but I bet you were in the best shape of your life back then.
I was in good shape. I was tall and skinny. Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
all
yeah,
those
yeah.
muscles. But yeah, it's scary. It's scary for people. And I just feel for, my whole life, 38 years, knock on wood, and my whole life has been, representing those that have to work. I think I heard 60% of our country right now is living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
So what happens when this happens and they're forced to work? They can't stay home and say, oh, it's hot. And they don't get the water breaks and they don't get the cool breaks and they get hurt. I mean, at that point, we want to be there to help pick up the pieces if it does happen.
Now, let me ask you one other question on this, along these lines. And I want to have you back because we've got so many other things to talk about, homework and the gig economy and so forth. But I want to ask you this. And I'm thinking about this causation issue again that you raised. So you're my lawyer. I had this injury that you have Dr. Jones ready to testify that it was related to the heat, the heat at the time that I fell and hit my head or whatever happened. Right? I mean, you do enough of this, you know exactly what's coming from the defendant, that they're going to try to poke holes in that causation issue. So as my lawyer, strategically, what do you do? How do you prepare your client, and what do you think about in terms of trying to plug those holes that a defendant's trying to poke through your case?
Well, simply said, I mean, the answer is be prepared, because every case is going to be different. I can't give you all the avenues, but you have to be prepared. You have to make sure that you get a complete history of your client's medical condition during his lifetime or her lifetime, so that when you do present your questions to your physician and your expert, that he or she has the entire picture in front of them. Because sometimes clients tend to forget something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, I used to take blood pressure medicine.
Okay.
Oh, right, I used to take medicine for, diabetes. So it's, I think, imperative for the attorney to really make sure that they have an accurate history. That's number one. And then number two, once you get your expert report, that you disclose everything to counsel so that they can do their reports. And if they don't accept it, you have to ask for a hearing. Workers' comp is an administrative hearing before a commissioner, and they make a decision. That decision can be appealed by both parties within 30 days to the circuit court, either on the record or de novo. But one other interesting point, if I may,
sure,
on this is, if, let's say, I've been thinking about this lately. In workers' comp, there are two methods of compensation for a claim. It's either an accidental injury or an occupational disease. And if under this statute, it appears that they define accidental injury as a sunstroke, a heat stroke, then there is another avenue to pursue, which is called the subsequent injury fund, which is really for pre-existing conditions. But if it's an accident, then you have to look and see, once the case is accepted, if in fact there's a possibility to bring in the fund. If you meet the threshold of a certain degree of impairment, you may be able to bring in the fund for some of those pre-existing conditions. There are thresholds. You can't just bring them in
I
on
see.
Every case.
I see.
But if someone, you know, suffers a stroke that renders him or her 50% disabled, and they had perhaps a 25% prior heart or seizure issue, you are then allowed to implead this fund that will pay for that portion of the disability, because in Maryland, the employer is not responsible for any pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. Every state's different, but Maryland is set up like this.
All right. Okay, very interesting.
So there's a lot to do. There's a lot to do.
And a lot to talk about. I wish we could talk about more, but we're definitely going to have you back. If folks, you have any injuries or you think you have a claim as a result of a work-related injury, Deborah, where can they reach you?
Our phone number is 240-553-1173, and feel free to email me at our firm. My initials are dfs@jgllaw.com.
And you heard it, folks. If you have any issues related to potentially a work-related injury that you think that there might be a claim for, give Deborah a call. Deborah, thanks again. Everyone out there, thank you for listening. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.